Thank you. Let's go back on the record. And Mr. Gerhardsen, any further witnesses?
No further witnesses. I do think that there's just at least one item that I thought would be worthwhile clarifying in the record.
Sure.
There was a question asked, and I think Mr. Timerdahl said he didn't know the answer. And if it's okay, and I would just sort of tell you what we discovered. There was a question about the North Dakota ITCs and how they're applied in the rider. They are just put in as a total system cost, and the jurisdictional allocator of the rider allocates them as it does any other expense or credit. So that there isn't a specific carve-out of those for different treatment. So that is different, I think, than maybe what you were thinking about, Commissioner Kalk. So there is that one item, I guess, if you'd like us to proceed in a different way. I think that would be Mr. Timerdahl's answer if you brought him to the stand. He wasn't involved when those were originally constructed, so we could dig into him a little further to see if there was any correspondence on that issue with the commission.
Does the commission require any testimony on that point, or is that sufficient clarification for you, Commissioner Kalk?
Well, if I could, Your Honor, I need to go back through the one testimony that I asked him about where the commission provided guidance. I thought that guidance that we provided was it had to be used for North Dakota. And I'm looking at his testimony now, and page 12, unlike the PTCs where the benefit is given to ratepayers immediately, the commission ruled that North Dakota ITCs should be amortized over 25 years. I thought that we made it clear in that period that for the benefit of North Dakota customers.
Your Honor.
So this is, I don't know how to clear that up.
But. Well, I just want to make sure that this isn't evidence because discussing a point about really whether you want to hear additional evidence from a witness or not. Is my question, Mr. Gerhardsen.
That's the question, too. I'm sort of reluctant to be the one to respond because
I guess I would say that maybe perhaps I'd like to talk to Stuart about a follow-up about changing the existing policy, what that would entail.
Okay. We can recall Mr. Timerdahl for that purpose.
Or we can wait, whatever you guys want.
Or we could go through Mr. Biller and then bring him back if there's any other follow-up.
That might be helpful in case some issues come up with another witness, then he can certainly address those when you recall him as well. Does that sound all right?
That sounds all right. Thank you, Your Honor.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You, Commissioners.
Okay. PSC, you have a witness?
Yes, Your Honor. At this time, the advocacy staff would like to call Michael Diller.
Mr. Diller, before we begin your testimony, I need to advise you on the penalties for perjury in North Dakota. The maximum penalty for perjury is a Class C felony punishable by a maximum $10,000 fine, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Would you raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear that the testimony that you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under the penalties of perjury?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Shue?
State your name for the record.
My name is Mike Diller.
Mr. Diller, your testimony has been pre-filed and already stipulated in the record as PSC 1. Is that a fair and accurate representation of your testimony?
That's my testimony.
Are there any changes that need to be made?
Not that I'm aware of.
My understanding is you have a brief introduction to your testimony.
I do. Thank you, Commissioners, for letting me take the seat one more time. Always appreciate being able to share some of the work that I've done, and this is a great opportunity. Otter Tail has, give you a little bit of historical perspective here. Otter Tail has only filed for one general rate increase application in 2008 over the course of my 28-year employment with the commission. Kind of an interesting little fact. The company has been able to function without rate increases for the most part, because of limited investment in infrastructure until recent years. Some growth sales, but not crazy growth sales, 2% a year in recent times. Because of the cost of energy rider, which allows them to pass through fuel costs and purchase power costs, the environmental rider that came online in 2013, the transmission rider beginning in 2011, and now the Wind Rider that began in 2008 and the subject of this hearing, as well as cost containment and efficiency gains that the company has been able to secure. When you establish rates in rate case proceedings, the established rates never match up perfectly with the projected revenues, expenses, and investment. So if established rates end up generating too much income, the excess earnings are retained by the utility company until such time that another rate hearing is held. Riders, on the other hand, pass through costs associated with a particular investment or expense category, and they are trued up so that customers do not pay more or less for that particular expense or investment. So in the case of Otter Tail, its riders have allowed it to obtain cost recovery for some of its larger investments, plus fuel and purchase power costs, but nothing more outside of the rate case filed in 2008. The riders do not cover Otter Tail's investments in distribution plant or the maintenance costs associated with its generation and distribution facilities. The riders do not cover customer accounting information or service costs or any of the A&G costs for salaries and pensions and benefits, insurance, office supplies, if I didn't say that already, and other significant expenses. So if riders are the new rate cases, then Otter Tail must manage the rest of its expenses within the limits of sales growth or go to the trouble of filing a more traditional rate increase application. While rider laws were ushered through the legislative chambers by the investor-owned utilities, I'm not an opponent of riders. I believe that these limited riders likely create more incentive for cost management on the part of the utilities than do rate increase applications, since our laws allow interim rates to begin recovering projected investments and expenses within 60 days of filing for the rate increase. Further, riders provide annual opportunities for the commission to review utilities' earnings and make adjustments as necessary as we go along. We are having a hearing today because of the large increase requested for Otter Tail's Wind Rider. At first blush, the increase makes as little sense as hitting down on a golf ball to make it go up. You would expect that the cost curve for these wind farms would continue downward until the production tax credits cease after 10 years and that bonus depreciation would only add to that downward movement. But the wind farms were built in earlier years and cannot use bonus depreciation again in 2015. Worse, the bonus depreciation for tax purposes is so large that Otter Tail cannot make full use of PTCs, which actually increases the wind rate, but only temporarily. So let me explain just a little further. Since the beginning of the wind farms, the PTCs are being delivered to ratepayers through the Wind Rider immediately when generated, and we've already heard that from Stuart. However, the PTCs can't be fully used for current tax purposes because bonus depreciation for projects like Begstone AQCS eliminates taxable income altogether. As a result, there's insufficient taxable income to apply the PTCs to. But don't despair, bonus depreciation just pushes the PTC tax benefits down the road until the bonus depreciation tax benefits are used up. Unfortunately, giving tax credits to customers before they can be used as a tax credit adds a deferred tax asset to the books and therefore adds a return, rate of return and a tax factor to the Wind Rider until Otter Tail can monetize the PTCs through its tax return. Aside from the tax net operating loss for bonus depreciation impacting the Wind Rider, my testimony discusses other impacts to the current and proposed Wind Rider, including variability in production and therefore PTCs from 1 year to the next, the weather's impact on sales and therefore the collection of Wind Rider revenues, the impact of renewable energy credit sales, and the lack of North Dakota taxable income to make full use of the North Dakota Renewable Investment Tax Credit, 15%. I have reviewed the historical costs as well as the projected costs and believe that Otter Tail's proposed cost update for its Wind Rider is reasonable and should be approved with some modifications going forward. And Stuart's already addressed those, so cut to the chase, ROE of 10.5%, a jurisdictional allocation factor of 39.209% instead of 41.018 authorized by the commission in the last rate case. And next time, Ottertail will update the North Dakota income tax rates going forward. At the end of the day, this rider ensures cost recovery for three wind farms generating electricity at less than 2 cents a kilowatt hour, which is far less than any other resource available by a long shot. While the cost is heavily subsidized by the state and the federal government through various tax incentives, it would be foolish to not take advantage of what our government has determined to be wise. Thank you. Well, you know what? That was the end of my prepared remarks, but I just give me 1 second here. I think I'm just going to let it come out through your cross examination, and if not, I'll ask Jack to ask me if I have any more observations. So that concludes my opening remarks.
Mr. Dillerholm, you spoke to the modifications. Could you describe what benefits the ratepayers should see from the modifications?
Yes, those modifications, at least the lower costs, will go in effect May 1, 2016. And Ottertail ran the numbers on it. I did not, and I believe that Stewart testified that it was worth about $442,000. I might have even picked it up and put it in my testimony somewhere.
Your Honor, I turn to the witness.
Thank you. Mr. Gerhardsen, do you have questions?
I think relatively few, Your Honor. Mr. Diller, were you present in the hearing room when Mr. Tomerdahl testified?
Yes, I was.
I asked Mr. Tomerdahl a couple of questions. The first one was about whether businesses conventionally take tax benefits such as bonus depreciation or right. accelerated depreciation when it's available. Do you have a view as to whether that is conventional practice for business?
As far as I'm aware, that's conventional practice, and I can't imagine it being anything else than conventional practice. Anytime you can not pay taxes, anytime you can keep cash in your hands as opposed to giving it to someone else, the time value of money is worth something. So you want to take advantage of bonus depreciation and accelerated depreciation, especially if you can just defer the benefits of PTCs out to future years. I mean, I'm a big fan of cash flow and the value of it.
Mr. Tomerdahl also testified that the way that accumulated deferred income taxes, the recognition of a deferred tax asset, et cetera, are conventional rate making practices. Is that your experience as well?
Well, we don't see deferred tax assets too often like we're seeing in this case, so it's a bit of an anomaly. But if you are giving away cash that you have not been able to accumulate for yourself, there has to be a return component built into the rates to compensate the company for giving tax credits to customers that they haven't secured yet. And so that's all a deferred tax asset is, and I don't know how else you'd account for it. Does that answer your question?
It does, and I have no further questions.
Mr. Lean, do you have any questions for the witness?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mike, for your testimony. Okay, so this morning you were here during Ottertail's testimony, right?
Yes.
Is there anything that jumped out that you would would disagree with what the testimony, the response of Ottertail said to any of our questions? Anything that jumped out at you that you were like, eh?
Well, the the North Dakota ITC one, I did recognize that as not to be accurate, and they caught that at lunch themselves, so... that was the only one that really struck me. I think any other comments I might have was more based on what I heard from commissioners than than from Stewart.
Okay. The on the North Dakota ITC, so you were aware that they were taking what North Dakota gave as a tax break for their customers, and it was being spread to the other jurisdictions?
Oh, the we're still on the North Dakota ITC. Yes, that's my understanding. I, quite frankly, appreciate the desire to want to accumulate all those for the benefit of North Dakota ratepayers. To me, that's an overall cost of putting an asset in place, and to me, I don't think that'd be fair to take 15% off the top and take it away for North Dakota customers and then tell Minnesota and South Dakota, you pay for 100% of the cost. We're going to pay for 85% of the cost because it's in North Dakota. To me, that just I don't like that idea.
So how do you reconcile that with if Minnesota wants to put a higher cost resource on there that we have in this commission have said, no, we're not going to pay for your high costs, so we want them to cover that? How this seems to me you're conflicting yourself with those two statements because you've testified that you agree with us that if Minnesota puts something in that they should have to pay for it. If North Dakota puts something in to benefit their customers, why shouldn't we benefit from it?
Well, I think that's two different things. One is it's a least cost resource, and another instance it's not a least cost resource. So, of course, we wouldn't pay for a resource that's not least cost resource, no matter where it's at, whether it's in Minnesota or South Dakota or anywhere. So I don't think there's a –
What about a policy? If a state legislative body puts a policy in for their state, why should the other state benefit from it?
Well,
Could you break them apart?
I can only guess at some of the reasons why you have a North Dakota ITC. I wasn't part of the legislative wrangling process that is involved there, but I would guess that some of it was, well, we want to encourage companies to build in our state versus Minnesota. And the fact that they built in our state, we had jobs, we have revenues, we have property taxes, we have all kinds of benefits from having them located in North Dakota to now say we're also going to abscond with 15% off the top for those ITCs, and the other two states have to pay for 100%.
Well, that makes sense. That's an answer that the average North Dakotan would probably buy into, that we offer this for them to build it here.
That's right.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
It could be the North Dakota legislature just wanted green energy, too. I don't know. Could be okay. That.
The let's see here.
You're probably hungry.
In the minority.
I don't really have any questions or concerns after this testimony this morning about the overall costs of that are out there and how Otter Tail is doing this. When we look at both of these cases, but you maybe heard my question to Stewart at the very end about, would you have any objection to merging this case with the, you know, PU 16148? And I understand Jerry's brought a point up at the end, and him and I talked about it on break. But Otter Tail's numbers are based on a May 1st decision. I don't believe we're going to have a decision here May 1st. So there's going to be some kind of true up we're going to have happen. So do you think that it'd be overly challenging, complicated that we couldn't put these two together where we render one decision that an increase of X amount of dollars covers the revenues that Otter Tail needs to cover both of these? Do you see some kind of flaw in that?
The commission and staff can do whatever needs to be done. The company can too. From an administrative standpoint, I kind of like the fact that these things are spread out. I mean, if we're going to start having hearings on every one of these riders, it takes time to put testimony.
Well, when the hearings are $3 a buck increase, yeah. I'm going to have hearings on
okay.
them.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying the administrative tasks involved in reviewing, what we say, 60, 80 pages of small print, and you want to now combine those so that we have two of those going simultaneously. We can do it. We can do most anything if we put our mind to it.
I was around when we set up the environmental rider, and it was, in my mind then, we had some real anomalies that happened with Big Stone. There was backing out of projects, and there was environmental things that hit, and the commission at that time, which I agreed with, was set this up as a line item that we wanted to track on the bills to keep a really close handle on what kind of environmental stuff was coming down. Made sense, I think, at that time. But looking back, I think it made sense then. Looking forward, I don't know that it makes sense anymore. So I think that putting the two together, you simplify the bill. We true it up this time around. Staff has to review one filing instead of two. So to me, I see it as a win-win if we can figure out the mechanics of it. So you don't think there's any mechanics of doing what I'm thinking of, if my colleagues agree, of course.
From staff's perspective, we'd have to review the same. We'd just be reviewing the renewable rider, and we'd be reviewing the environmental rider, and then we'd be merging them together. I guess it probably isn't going to add any time. It's just going to put all the time together in one spot.
But we're really with the tax implications of what's happening. I know this is once again maybe an anomaly, but it might become the way of the future. If these tax things come in every year, we'll be faced with trying to true these up.
Well, maybe I could address that. I think Stuart started getting into it a little bit, and maybe if I just say the same thing Stuart said, because I'm saying it a second time, it'll mean more.
It takes three times to uptake, too.
Yeah. I think we're getting lost a little bit when we – it sounds like we're thinking that this is going to be something that occurs all the time, forevermore. We've got these deferred tax assets that are just going to build, and they're never going to turn around. Big Stone AQCS project, $400 million asset coming online in 2015. 50% depreciation is $200 million. Otter Tail share is 53.9. So you got $100 million worth of extra depreciation in 1 year. Otter Tail's entire 2015 net operating income, including manufacturing, plastics, and everything else, is just a little over $100 million. So the magnitude of AQCS is what's driving this, and we're not going to have another, hopefully, cross our fingers. I guess you don't know with EPA the way it is, but we don't have any reason to believe that these production tax credits, these deferred tax assets created by a short term not being able to use them, isn't going to turn around and disappear within a couple, 2-3 years' time, especially when you think about the return that's going to be required on that Big Stone AQCS project. Okay, what did I just figure? Your share is $200 million, thereabouts. $200 million times, let's just do some rounding, 10% rate of return, and let's add 1.5 for taxes. What's 15%? There's $30 million more dollars of net profit that can be used to offset some of this accelerated depreciation. And so,
you don't think we'll be here next year at this same time trying to figure out the difference between how the renewable rider keeps going up because the ECR rider keeps going down?
Oh, I think we might still be in that boat next time, but the years after that, I don't think we would be. You asked the question, any big investments coming along? I wish I had photographic memory, but I don't. It seems like Otter Tail came in and shared with us their IRP plan, and I think that gas plant that they're I don't think that's secret.
Not anymore.
Yeah. I think a plant that they're looking at, you just have to look at the IRP. There's no secrets. It shows that they need resources in 2020 or thereabouts. And so the next time that we can see some kind of really huge project would probably be in 2020. That gives us quite a few years between now and then.
There's transmission projects that are in the queue. How would that affect there may be transmission build-out coming quickly to resolve some issues. Would that also affect this, where we find ourselves because of transmission projects?
Bonus depreciation, right? is applied to whatever the rate is that year. It's in whatever the rate is that year times whatever the plant investments were made during that year is your bonus depreciation. And so yeah, there's going to be continue to be some bonus depreciation.
When the, there's still a couple more questions, Mike. When the renewable rider was set up, wasn't the idea to keep all your costs and benefits associated with the wind farms, if you will, or solar somewhere down the road, in one line item? Wasn't that the thought process?
All the renewables, or what do you?
I'm trying to get to is it, when we set up the riders, I was always under the viewpoint of you have a true a benefit or a description of what the costs are for that project and benefits. Mm-hmm. But once we start jumping between line items, renewables and the ECR and others, don't we really negate the reason for having a line item when we're doing what's best for the company, but it's not really showing the true reflection of what those costs associated with that resource are?
That is certainly true with the renewable rider, for sure. I mean, the customer can't see that they're getting energy for less than 2 cents because it's all combined in the cost of energy adjustment. So that's true.
So what's the benefit of having the renewable rider anymore? Why don't we just merge these now at some point in time, roll them all into rates, and Otter Tail does their management, which you've said they do a good job of it, and they don't have any major build-out coming?
I love the discussion we're having. I suppose you could put the renewable rider in the cost of energy adjustment because that's where the benefits are. On that Big Stone, though, I kind of like that EPA tagline on the bill. That we're spending $400 million on this thing, and the Clean Power Plan would have us now look the other way and not use it. I mean, I like the fact that it's on the customer bills and it shows what this thing is costing. And in the event that something goes awry with the Clean Power Plan or some other, and we can't use it, boy.
What benefit do the customers have at this point of that environmental rider? You like it as a tracking tool, but you could probably get it other ways.
I just like it because it shows the cost of that to a customer. It shows that's your cost for one coal plant that we've retrofitted so that it meets with all of EPA standards. That's your cost.
At what point does that cost become a cost of doing business? Like,
it is a cost of doing business.
You like it.
That's I like point. It. You evidently don't like it. I can agree with that.
I'm just trying to figure out what's the best going forward. So you don't envision that the environmental rider should ever roll into base rates?
Well,
we have environmental retrofits all the time that the companies are going to be asked to do.
Yeah, I really didn't come here to talk about the environmental rider, and so I'm trying to think fast on my feet here. We're going to have that big honking bonus depreciation right up front that's going to create a huge ADIT offset to rate base. That's good. So that could be recognized up front. The only cost decline other than that would be the accumulated depreciation.
I guess maybe to wrap up the discussion, Mike, because you and I can banter for days. Yeah. And there are others in the room, I guess. I think that one approach is we approve this at $3 a month, whatever it is exactly, and we deal with the other case. That's an approach that makes sense. But I'm trying to look at another option of putting these together so the customer has one cost of a rider that it would probably be an increase, and the customer easily can understand that. Going forward, we allow the company will be able to then in the next year for sure, and maybe down the road as different tax policies come into play, they can do what they do and manage, come back in, and here's what we need to true these up. I think that's easier for the customer to understand and for us to manage than have these two separate that will be, that I call it schizophrenic policy in the beginning, because I think it is. One day you improve a rate of $3, you increase $3, the next day you decrease $1. Which do you think is better?
You know, I didn't come up here with that idea that I shared with you earlier. And I'd love to hear the company's perspective on it because, again, I'm just coming at this cold. But I think we accomplish getting rid of the schizophrenic stuff that you're talking about if we put the renewable rider in the cost of energy adjustment, because that's where the benefits of free energy is coming. It's coming through the cost of energy adjustment. So why wouldn't you just put why wouldn't you just put all the costs in the cost of energy adjustment? So put it there, and then you just have the big stone rider and the transmission rider is separate.
Well, one of the reasons we've told Xcel Energy to not do that is we want to keep visibility of these wind resources when they come online.
Visibility when they come online.
So I see your point. So to answer the question, though, you don't think that merging these two together is the right approach? You said we could do it.
I'm on the witness stand. I prefer if we're gonna get rid of riders, I'd prefer to put the renewable rider in the cost of energy adjustment.
Okay. And what would you do with the ECR rider then?
I didn't come here to talk about that, but it would be fine in base rates. I think it'd be fine in base rates.
So you said before that you could technically merge these two riders, but that wouldn't be your preference.
Right. Sure, we can merge and tear apart anything. Yes, we could.
So what's the downside of putting them together?
Well, one's to, I mean, they're two different things. I don't know, what would we call them? I guess I just haven't thought about
it. Okay. All right, I think, last question, Mike. I appreciate the discussion with Otter Tail about tweaking the ROE. But in your testimony somewhere, you talked about the average of 10.25 somewhere. Why don't we talk to Otter Tail and have them go to 10.25 ROE? Why not take them down to where the other IOUs are closer to?
Well, I spent quite a bit of time arguing that Otter Tail is not an average company, and so I don't know that giving them an average ROE is reasonable.
Why are they not an average company again?
Well, if you look at...
Size?
Well, I didn't talk too much about their rural service territory, but the fact that their rates are, if you look at page 18 of my testimony,
okay,
in 2003, their cost, their average cost of electricity delivered was 6 cents. Today it's 7.5. NSP's was 5.5, and now it's 9 cents. And MDU's looks like it was about 6.5, and now it's 8 1/3 or thereabouts.
Don't you think the graphs like this are deceiving to customers, though, when we talk about this, when perhaps what we should do is talk about their cost of electricity and then say this is how much the renewable rider is, this is how much the ECR rider is? Don't you think that by putting all those numbers that the customers pays actually gives a better description of what people are actually paying for each IOU?
Yeah, no, I don't. I think that...
I don't.
I
so think if I add $3 a month to this cost, that's not going to affect this chart, but it affects what they pay, right?
This is total revenues divided by total sales. Anytime you change what you collect from customers, pushes the line up or down depending on which way you're going. I think this is the best way to look at long-term management of a utility company because you can't just look at 1 or 2 years because you've got investment cycles and they're all on different investment cycles. So if you just looked at, 1 year, that doesn't give you a good picture. But if you look at it over 10, 12, 15 years and you have a company that's outperforming the rest of them or moving in the right direction, as Otter Tail's has done here, I think you give them some consideration on ROE.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mike.
Yep.
Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. One of my first questions was, do you have concerns over the 10.75% ROE? Since you negotiated with them to move it down to 10.5, talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on the 10.75.
Well, the 10.75 was authorized back in 2009. Since then, if you recall, in the NSP rate case, we've authorized 10.25 for 2015. MDU, I think the last electric rate case, it's been a while. I think they're at 10.75 as well. Mm-hmm. And so Based on what we did in the NSP case, they're at 10.25. Based on the ROE reports that we get from all the state commissions, average being 10.25 or 10.26 for first quarter 2016, I thought 10.5 was reasonable for Otter Tail.
And is that just for this ride, or how does that affect that if they go down to 10.5? Is that for all their earnings?
No, this is just for this rider. And so to jump ahead to your next question, will we consider that in the environmental the environmental cost rider? We will. It will give us another opportunity. It's one of the reasons that I like multiple riders, because things change. You can have a terrible, well, I guess Otter Tail had a terrible winter beginning of 2016. I think I was out golfing in the middle of March. And so it allows you to, as you move along through a year, to consider earnings as you go. And so, you know, in a couple more months when we're sitting here talking about the environmental cost recovery rider, perhaps we'll have even a better understanding of where earnings are going for the year, and it'll allow us to make more adjustments.
Okay, and then I think in Stewart's testimony, he talked about over-earning a certain amount. Let's see here.
Stewart's testimony?
Yeah. So, it's on page 22. They in 2011, they got 11.8%, 12.03, 2013 was low, and then 2014 was a little under their authorized of 10.1. In 2015, they current analysis of 10.94 equates to approximately $558,000. So you think that you're adjusting that. You're going a long way to taking care of any potential over-earnings with the change in the allocation factor, which reduces, and the reduction in the ROE on this rider.
Where is this five? Oh, his. I think if I remember, his is the difference between 10.94 and 10.75.
Oh, right.
So what this rider would do is it'd move it closer to, you know, let's just add 10.8. It's not moving it all the way down to 10.5.
Right.
This is just for this rider.
Okay. All right. Well, I do appreciate that you all worked on that. And so tell me, since you mentioned it in your testimony, that the riders give you a chance to review the earnings and make adjustments there. That's the first time I've heard that. Is that part of your analysis on all these riders?
It has been a changing thing. You know, when we first started experiencing riders, we were just reviewing them, stamping them, and then as we began to realize that, oh, these are the new rate cases.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have some venue for reviewing earnings from time to time, and so I think that Victorino took MDU to task a little bit on earnings through the generation rider, if I recall. So it's not brand new. Staff is it, but it is a new direction for staff.
Okay, and the company's obviously open to it too, because they agreed to some changes here.
Well,
which won't be reflected in this rate. It'll be.
Right.
That'll
be. And you might be wondering, why would you do that, Mike? Well, If we had a rate case, we wouldn't. If you guys required a show cause case and we got it done in 8 months' time, we'd lose the value of that for 8 months until we could render a decision. By going through this rider, it's already April, almost May 1. We've secured benefits immediately as opposed to trying to have some kind of rate case in the future, a show cause case where we challenge their rates.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be an adjustment in there?
Going forward, May 1st. It'll be part of the true-up calculation next time.
Next time.
Yep.
All right. Okay. So you answered the one question, another question I was going to ask. This chart that you have showing the company's revenues divided by sales and showing how they compare to other investor-owned utilities, it does, in fact, include rider income. It's everything. So looking at their performance suggests that despite the fact that they aren't coming in here for rate cases, they aren't. And they've got a pretty generous ROE. The customers are getting good rates.
They are. I heard earlier where the commissioners were, how do we answer consumers? I tell you, when I get the obstinate customers, not that we have that many out there, but when I get the obstinate customers that just don't want to hear what I have to offer in technical terms about deferred tax assets and things like that, I go to this chart and I say, do you realize that you have some of the cheapest rates in North Dakota? And do you realize that North Dakota has some of the cheapest rates in the country?
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate your concerns, but this renewable energy rider, this amount of money you're paying, secures 2 cents a kilowatt hour energy for you. Do you like that? Yes, I do.
Okay. Let's see. 39% allocation factor for North Dakota, that's just for this year?
Well, that's a good question. My interpretation of it is that sets the jurisdictional cost allocation rate until we decide otherwise. And the reason
for just these resources.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't apply to...
Right. If we have a rate case and there's new information we need to take advantage of and change it, we would. And we'll do that in this rider. But that jurisdictional allocation energy E2 factor that Stuart talked about, it changes every year. It's just a matter of if it changes a bunch, then we should recognize it. And it's changing a bunch. It's changing from 41 to 39. The fact that we've held it at 41 since the commission last authorized it in their rate case, to me, I think we set it at 39 and it stays at 39 forevermore until we decide otherwise.
Okay, but is that just on all the costs of this rider? Or is it for everything else?
Yeah, we're just talking about the rider here. Yep.
All right. On the North Dakota tax credit, can you tell me what it is? What is that tax credit? How much is it?
Yes. It's 15% of investment. It's a credit, a North Dakota tax credit of 15% of investment. So in the case of, I think, Laverne was around $100 million investment, $15 million worth of tax credits to be applied to North Dakota's income tax return.
So who pays for that?
Who pays for the tax credits?
Mm-hmm.
The taxpayers.
Minnesota taxpayers?
No.
South Dakota taxpayers?
Nope.
Is it income that North Dakota doesn't get?
Is it income North Dakota doesn't get? Well, I don't know. You'd have to do the...
Wasn't that what a tax credit is? It's less money they're paying in to the state of North Dakota?
I'd have to assume that when the legislature came up with this 15% credit, I'd have to assume that they were expecting benefits beyond 15%. You wouldn't pay 15% to get back 5.
Right.
And so that'd be my...
I recognize the increases that, you know, all the added benefits of the projects and stuff, but I'd be interested in looking back and seeing if there was any talk about how those should be divvied up, and if, you know, other states should be, customers in other states should be benefiting from those when they're indeed being paid for by North Dakotans. Now we're getting some of the other benefits too, but
I could only guess that the legislature did their math and figured out whether or not there were benefits to be gained or lost, and hopefully they decided that benefits would be gained by offering this, mm-hmm. and so in the end, we should be more than whole.
They probably didn't think about how that would be carried through in the rates that people were paying, you know, the utility customers in our state. Maybe that wasn't part of the calculation in their consideration in passing that policy. But I bet Randy was in the legislature then, so he might have some light to shine on that.
Commissioner, if I might add, we want to be careful. I don't know what kind of tax credits in Minnesota that's occurring, but if we go down this road, then we have other companies
right.
that build more things in Minnesota than they build here. So,
well, it was an interesting question that Brian brings up, and let's see. Regarding the riders and combining them, I agree with you that the environmental rider has great value in segregating the cost that customers are paying for environmental upgrades required by really laws and rules that are beyond our control, kind of coming down from the EPA, and there's really no other way to, well, that's just a really good way to track that and to communicate to them that this is what it's costing you and to refer back to them. So I wouldn't be supportive of combining this rider with the environmental cost recovery rider. But I'm a little curious about your thought of moving it into the energy costs. Is that mostly just for fuel? The energy cost is just a fuel cost,
it's
right?
It's fuel
right?
and purchase power costs, MISO costs. I mean, there's quite a lot in the, mm-hmm. the cost of energy adjustment. Included in the cost of energy adjustment are megawatts of wind with no cost. So
you'd be recovering in that, right? Or if you put these in there, you'd be recovering the investment costs on these wind farms.
Where the benefits of the low cost, the free energy is. Yeah. It'd be located in the same place. Yeah.
Okay.
Hadn't really thought about it until I got up here on the stand. I hope it's not driving the company crazy, but I'm not looking over there for that reason.
No. Well, and I'm not sure, you know, if that's a real clear way to do it either. But what about the making the timing sync up so that the riders all kind of come on at the same time? Or you don't like that idea either? Or you see problems with that?
It's one of those deals where the worker bees and the policymakers, it's a little bit of a clash. I understand the value of putting them all together and smoothing it all out and not causing any kind of noise. From the worker bee standpoint, I like to have these spread out a little bit so that we can give give the full review that they deserve. It's a lot of money. These riders represent mm-hmm. huge amounts of money, and we should do a good review of them.
Okay.
And it'll make it more challenging if we have all three of them in the same month.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's all my questions. Thanks.
Commissioner Christman.
You said you weren't sure, Michael, what the company was thinking of your testimony because you're not looking over there. So I'll just tell you that it appeared that either Bruce or Stuart threw a water bottle at you at one point. not really sure what to think of that. But your testimony has been pretty helpful, your written testimony, and so I don't really have a lot of questions on that, but I'm looking for a little more tax advice.
Okay. Take the money when you can.
So you're saying that is the normal business practice to do, you know, basically all legal things to lower your immediate tax burden and worry about future years' tax burden in future years?
That is.
And that's because of the, what was the term you used, the present value of money?
Present value of money.
And is that more important at times of high interest rate and maybe slightly less important at times of historically low interest rates? The present value of money?
It would be more valuable during times of high rates.
Okay. And now I need a comparison to make sure I'm understanding things right. A tax credit takes a dollar for dollar off of your tax liability.
Yes.
And and depreciation lowers your taxable income.
That's right.
And so if your tax rate is 39%, $1 million worth of depreciation would be about equivalent to $390,000 of tax credits.
Right.
And so if interest rates are very low, so the present value of money is not a huge deal, that's one if. And then if income tax rates were slashed dramatically, in future years you might think we would have been better off to have used our tax deductions first and save the credits, right? Because now you'd be using your credits and getting more than $390,000 worth of value out of them. And vice versa if tax increases rise.
I don't think you'd ever make that decision or reach that conclusion. You would have a greater benefit in times of high inflation or high interest rates, and you'd have less of a benefit when interest rates are low. But you'd still have a benefit, whether you just have more or less, depending on the interest rate that you're using.
Well, let's do some math then on using that 39% thing. If you have a current year's $1 million worth of taxable income, and you use $1 million of depreciation to lower that to zero, you solve that problem, and you, let's say you saved $390,000 worth of credits for in the future. So you've eliminated your tax burden, you saved $390,000.
Did we do that through extra tax depreciation? Is that how
we did
it?
Well, you used some depreciation that you could have used then, or you could have deferred it.
I just need to make sure I understand what the story is here. That's the $100 million worth of depreciation. Is that the extra tax depreciation, or what is that?
No, the $1 million, $1 million.
Okay.
Just regular depreciation.
Okay.
And so you use it now, and so you don't have to pay tax on that $1 million of income.
Okay, so that's.
And so you did that, and then you didn't have to use your $390,000 of tax credits, so you saved them for in the future. Right?
Well, there's. I don't want to mislead you, and I want to make sure I understand. There's book income and book deductions and book depreciation. There's tax income and tax depreciation and all that, and I don't want to mix them up.
I'm just talking about the tax.
The tax return, not book return,
right.
Tax return.
Right.
Okay, so So the taxable income that you started with of $1 million was book income to start with, and then you took another million off for the extra tax. Is that the story?
You had $1 million in income that year, okay, from your ratepayers,
yep,
and you invested $1 million, and so you don't have any taxes due. And if you had put off your depreciation in that investment, you could have used some tax credits, $390,000.
Here's where I can help you. For book purposes and tax purposes, your depreciation is different. And you're pretending like they're both the same. You're getting $1 million here and $1 million there. And that's why I'm trying to nail you down on which we're talking about. Let me take a run at it. Can I take a run,
sure,
at it? And rather than use an example, I've got a handy dandy little thing that I did one day when the computers were down. I just want to have it in front of me as I talk. Okay, in these wind farms, it's a 25-year plant life, right? 25-year plant life, that's what we're talking about here today with these wind farms. And so your book depreciation is 4%. 4% a year will get you that asset written off at the end of 25 years. For bonus depreciation of 50% plus 10 for a half-year convention of regular tax depreciation, you get 60% depreciation in the first year for tax purposes, whereas you get 4% for book purposes. So you and so the difference between what you can apply on your tax return of 60% compared to 4% is 56% difference. And you take that times the tax rate that you would have, the tax rate, so you know what you would have, 56% of 38% for taxes, it turns into real money when you're talking about $300 million worth of investment. Those savings are an offset to rate base, and they just deteriorate ever so slowly over the 25 years of that plant life. So accumulated deferred income taxes benefits ratepayers the entire life of the plant. It's not a one-for-one-year deal. You're getting all the money up front in the first 5 years. You got this pile of cash that you've not turned over to the taxing authorities. And then when book depreciation is 4% and taxes zero in year 6.5, then that negative rate base balance slowly diminishes until it's zero at the end of 25. So that's why I was saying in your illustration, a higher interest rate makes the advantage greater and a lower one makes it less, but it's an advantage no matter what. It's just the extent of the advantage.
Excellent.
And the time value of money.
No other questions. Thank you.
Okay, good.
Thank you. Mr. Hsu, any redirect?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Any other questions, Mr. Lean?
I'd ask one. Have you heard of customers seeing the renewal rider line on their bill and thinking that they're paying more for renewable energy than they would be if they wouldn't have these projects?
Yes. So I've had several conversations. In particular with facility management supervisor of the Capitol Complex, with the prison, I've had several, and they don't get it. They don't understand it because, well, how can I be paying more and it's benefiting me? And I tell them, well, you got you got free energy in the cost of energy. Well, I don't see it because the cost of energy adjustment doesn't reflect it. And then I tell them, well, the cost of energy's got a 4-month delay and a 2-month delay and actually getting end of month, it's a 6-month delay before it's fully reflected. And so then I say, well, wait 6 months. It's a difficult thing to explain to customers, and that's why I'm suggesting that maybe we put it in the cost of energy adjustment where the free wind energy is located.
So it does send kind of a bad price signal to the customer that renewable.
Yeah, I think it's a horrible price signal because they think it's that's the extra cost of wind. It's not the extra cost of wind. It's the whole cost of wind.
Yep. So, no further questions. Thank you.
Mr. Gerhardsen?
Just two items of clarification. The last discussion you had about how the FCA and the delay, I'm just guessing that wasn't Otter Tail's FCA.
Nope, that was MDU. I didn't take his question to mean just Otter Tail.
Do you know what how the FCA, what period of time is used?
For Otter Tail?
Yeah.
Well, I assume it's the same 4-month rolling average, but, it's been a while since I've looked at one. But, again, there's 2 months of just collecting the information. The accountants do all their stuff. I mean, it's a 6-month by the time it rolls completely through.
And I just wanted to make sure the record reflect we don't serve this building or the prison, to my knowledge. I have a question just about the ITCs again, and there was some discussion, some questions about whether those should be 100% to North Dakota customers. And I was just going to ask you, do you know if Minnesota Power has a North Dakota-based wind farm?
Minnesota Power? I don't go to any of those siting hearings, and I don't really pay.
I'm just
Bison Wind, yeah, Bison Wind. Is that what you're talking about?
Does that remind you? Does that refresh your recollection that maybe they do?
Okay.
And what I was going to ask you is, do you know, do they have any North Dakota customers?
Minnesota, is that, I don't know.
The one in Duluth.
It's probably the one that goes all the way to Duluth, but I don't know that for a fact.
And I was just going to ask you, do you have any reason to believe that they don't qualify for the North Dakota ITC?
I don't have any knowledge of it. I imagine they are, well, a co-op. They don't pay income taxes. I don't know what the North Dakota ITC would do for them, but
it wouldn't surprise you to find out that Minnesota Power is an IOU, would it?
Oh yeah, it would. Minnesota Power. Okay, I was thinking of the co-op that. Minn Kota. Yeah, sorry. Okay. Yeah. If you're an investor-owned utility company, you'd be able to make use of the investment tax credits, whether the energy is used or sold here.
That's all I have, Your Honor.
Thank you. Any further questions from the commission?
Yes, Your Honor, just a couple, Mike. Okay, either I misunderstood your testimony or you gave Commissioner Fedorchak the wrong answer.
Oh,
so,
let's
get this cleared up. My understanding of our discussion was that you felt that the renewable rider could be moved into the fuel clause. And your answer to Commissioner Fedorchak was on the environmental rider.
No.
Which is it?
We'll just call it the wind rider. Then we don't get confused. The renewable rider is the wind rider.
Okay.
And that's where – so the wind – that's generated from the
answer. The Commissioner Fedorchak was my under recollection of what she said was she likes the environmental rider and then referred to this is the one that could be rolled into the fuel clause adjustment. That's not the case.
No.
It's the renewable rider / wind rider that could be moved into the fuel clause.
Right.
You feel that way.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, to clarify that. And then we talked before you and I briefly about your page 18, the table. With the Otter Tail's got the cheap power?
Sure.
Okay, so the commission approved the rate case in 2009.
Yes.
So the 2009 mark there of just over 7, let's just say 7 cents a kilowatt.
Right.
Now, it goes down for a little bit to 2012, then it goes up to 2014. So those fluctuations would not be based on base rates. It's on the different levels of all the riders, correct?
Yeah, when if you're looking at, 13, 14, all of them, they're all affected by the rider.
Okay,
yeah.
So then, as Commissioner Fedorchak calls it, the Kalk math, I like to call it the beer math, too. if we, let's just say for discussion, that the $3.03 increase that's in front of us now, let's say we approve that. And let's say we approve the reduction of $1.19 in the ECR case. So that's a net increase of about $1.84 a month. So wouldn't I add that for 2016 to the current rate of $7.75? So then all of a sudden, Otter Tail would go from being the lowest cost utility to the highest cost utility.
Yeah. No, these are actually cents per kilowatt hour.
Okay.
And so I think you're talking about overall a dollar or $3.
But give me a sense of what that will mean in rates.
Well, let's say it's a what is since in their filing, what does it represent, a 3% increase in the overall bill? Is that about right? So you could move that 3%. You could move it.
Okay, I see your point.
You could, which wouldn't move it very far.
Got it. So you're still, it's still, no matter what happens here, you're still going to make the same argument. Okay. That makes sense. There was one thing that you said that kind of struck my attention, that you were talking about, we were bantering back and forth about how, listen, Otter Tail doesn't come in here for rate cases. We have these riders and staff does their thing. You guys do your thing. And if we're going to spend all this time, we might, rate cases cost a lot, take a lot of time. Then when you're talking to one of my colleagues, you talked about we review them and then we stamp them.
Stamp them?
Yeah, that's what you said. You said we review them and then you guys stamp them, we move forward.
Yeah, I think what I was trying to explain was the, you evolve with changing laws. It took a while for these riders. The legislation went through the halls. It was approved. The companies slowly started making use of the riders, staff slowly.
Are you trying to imply that the riders don't get the same review from the commission that a rate case would?
No.
Okay, that was just my point. I just wanted to see what you were trying to say with that. Because
when I was talking about stamping, I was talking about ROE. We didn't consider earnings in the early stages of riders. We got like you sometimes do when you get deep in your work. All you're doing is looking at your little piece of the pie, and you ignore the big piece of the pie. And what I'm saying now is we don't just ignore that and stamp it okay without looking at earnings, without looking at the big piece of the pie. Yep.
Do you think going forward that this type of review will continue on riders that we're having today?
Yes. Yes, it will.
So what is the benefit of doing these four hearings a year on transmission rider hearing, a renewable rider hearing, an environmental rider hearing? Why would we want to do all these when we should just get everything and roll it into rates?
Well,
if this is going to continue, which I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
Let the companies manage.
I think it depends on which asset you're talking about. I remember early on I think right out of the gate you started talking about, you told us rates were going to do this on the wind farms and they're not doing that.
Was the testimony in 2009.
Yeah, my recollection was just a little different, and there's going to be a point to answer your question here, but my recollection was we're going to see a U-curve in the costs of wind. It's going to come down during the PTC years, and then it's going to come up after PTCs are gone. And I don't think, I think that's a reasonable expectation still today. So you would want a rider on a declining cost curve, which is where we're at with wind riders. So rider works great for that. On Big Stone, the fact that they're taking all that depreciation in year one and building up that huge ADIT rate base offset, it is going to still be on a downward trend as the plant is written off, but it's not big enough that it would overly concern me, and there is some advantage to having that in base rates because That little bit of tick down in cost over time is what's allowed companies like Otter Tail to not have a rate case in, but one in 30 years. And so I think I'd be okay with base rating the Big Stone AQCS project, but not yet for the wind. Let's wait till it gets to the very bottom and then
okay. Well, and then,
and then let's stick it in base rates.
The last question, well, I have two questions. The you talked about moving the potentially the renewable rider, the wind rider, into the fuel clause adjustment. Wouldn't that remove the commission's oversight of these assets by doing that?
Oh, no. It would be the same review process. It's just that I'd have to get the commission to give us an exception to utilize the cost of energy adjustment specifically for that. And we've done that in the past as we've
Wouldn't we lose visibility, the fact that by having the renewable rider or the putting in rates, we see it all the time. If we rolled it into the fuel clause, it wouldn't show up every year. We'd have to go look for it.
Yeah, and that was the point that Jerry brought up, is it does a disservice to customers having that as a separate line item, because they look at it and they go, that's the cost of wind. No, that's not it. I mean, that's what wind is costing us.
If it was in the fuel clause adjustment, how would the commission get to track those ups and downs? We wouldn't at all. Unless we set up some type of proceeding up to go review the fuel clause adjustment charges.
Yeah, we would just do, I mean, my vision, again, I didn't get up here prepared to offer alternatives like this, but my vision would be that we would have the same filings, same annual filings, same opportunity to question earnings, and when we're all done, those are your revenue requirements. Put it in your cost of energy adjustment.
So you're saying if we did that, there should be a couple hooks on it that says they file with us annually or whatever. It's what they're doing, so we would have the visibility of it, wouldn't just lose sight of it.
Right. I mean, they would, whatever you guys decide, that'll be how they how they do things.
The last one that I have, until I think of something else.
Yeah.
The you heard my question, I'm sure, to Stuart about decommissioning costs, and I don't know if I ever got a good answer back from that. It's still my notes to follow up on. Do you believe that the decommissioning costs are included here anywhere? And if not, where should they be?
I don't think so. The reason I don't think so is there's the depreciation rate is around 4%, and so that to me sounds like we're just writing off the asset so that it's at zero at the end of the assets life. If there was an amount in there to cover decommissioning costs, you'd expect the depreciation rate to be a little higher than it is. It is today. It's at 4.15%. Is that 0.15% their estimation of needs? I don't think that the company has probably even addressed it yet. And
in previous cases with Excel, we particularly asked for that line item, and they showed us where it was at in their cost of wind. Don't you think that's something that should be able to be pointed to? And if not, it should be added to these costs?
I think the company should go back and consider it. I am not in a position today to say whether you need it or not. I could give you some offhand comments like, as long as they keep those steel towers painted so they don't rust, those towers may be out there for 100 years, not 25 years. And so how much do you really need to decommission those? All you do is put a new generator on the top of it after 25 or 30 years. Is that metal salvageable enough that it pays for all the decommissioning costs? I don't know those things, but the company...
Okay. What is the standard practice for when a company owns a coal mine or a coal plant or a natural gas plant? Do they put in depreciation costs in the cost of running those facilities?
I'm not familiar with how coal companies operate.
Well, investor owns. When MDU owns a coal plant, don't they put in costs of decommissioning, or do they come back in for a rate case? Or there's both, I guess, from MDU.
Yeah, there's. Oh, you're talking about a generating plant.
These are generating plants. They generate electricity.
Yeah, I think you're right. And regular coal generating plants, yeah, there's decommissioning costs, I'm sure, built into the depreciation rates. Yep.
So you think that wouldn't be a stretch to have it built into the wind?
It wouldn't be a stretch at all. I don't know what it would be, and I guess I'd ask the companies to investigate that a little bit if I were in your shoes.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Yep. Very good.
Any further questions from the commissioners? Any follow-up, Mr. Hsu?
Mr. Dill, are you familiar with Otter Tail customer bills and what they have on them?
Generally, go ahead.
Under other charges and credits.
Could I just have a copy of it then, since you have it there?
I may approach.
Yes, you may.
Can you just come up here and ask your questions with looking over my shoulder? Would that work?
I was just asking if you could clarify the transmission rider, the transmission rider, the renewable rider, as well as the fuel adjustment, and if they are included together as a line item under other charges and credits, as one single.
18, let me find 18. Cost for compliance with federal EPA rules is 17, which is... separate from energy and renewable adjustment.
So the number 18 involves the transmission rider, the renewable rider, as well as the fuel adjustment under single line item, correct?
Yes, they're all combined, yep, in the presentation to the customer. Yep.
That's all I have, Your Honor. Thank you for letting me do a little more.
Thank you.
Recollect his recollection.
Thanks, Jack.
Any further questions? Mr. Gerhardson?
One moment.
Anything? Yeah. Sure.
No more questions, Your Honor.
Thank you. Any other questions from the commissioners? No? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Did you swear him in, Your Honor?
Yes, I did. I also advised him of the penalties for perjury.
I thought the price went up, wasn't it?
It is now $10,000.
That makes a difference.
Any other witnesses, Mr. Hsu?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. Would you like to recall your witness, Mr. Gerhardson?
Your Honor, we don't have anything else to cover. However, I do have some information on the depreciation and how it incorporates decommissioning costs. Mm. Why don't I explain what we would want the commissioners to know, and the commissioners can ask us whether we need sworn testimony on the subject. It's my understanding, after conferring with our folks, that it's included in what's called the net salvage value, which is part of the depreciation calculation. How much it is and the how much salvage is assumed, I don't know, and I don't know that anyone in the room would know. But that is a standard practice in our depreciation rate determinations. So if the commissioners would like me to, I could have Mr. Tomerdahl, if they take that as informative, or we could ask that there be judicial notice, however anyone would like me to proceed on that. I think it's the only sort of open-ended item that we have at the moment, mm-hmm. at least that I could remember.
Sure. Commissioners?
That explanation works for me, but Commissioner Kalk asked the question, so...
Well, I think it might be worthwhile just to have Stuart kind of talk through this a little bit, if that's all right.
We can call Mr. Tomerdahl with the understanding.
Or whoever.
Yeah, I don't know that we actually have a depreciation accountant who is not, in attendance, so we weren't prepared to.
Well, let me just talk through this out loud then, if that's all right with my colleagues and the judges. That, the commission, as you know, has a jurisdiction. We may require financial assurances, and your wind farms are coming up on that 10-year period right now. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be in front of us soon about whether the amount of money you have is adequate based on what those numbers have fluctuated all over. So I think maybe if there'd be a way to provide an exhibit of breaking those costs out of what you have set aside for decommissioning, and that if we look at it in a work session and compare it to what we've seen before, if I think it's woefully inadequate, then I would maybe ask that the increase be put there. If I think it's appropriate, at least it's a baseline of some discussion that we have a number which you think would be appropriate for decommissioning, because I've struggled with what those costs are going to be. But the financial assurances for wind farm, at 10 years, it is a discussion point, and I believe it'll become a bigger discussion point. That's my, I don't know, Randy and Julia, we've talked a lot about that, but that's kind of where I'm thinking, I guess.
That's fine with me at this point in this case.
Okay.
Works.
Well, yeah, if that would be okay, then a late filed exhibit breaking those down would be perfect.
We will do that, Your Honor.
And then an assessment whether you think that what you have is adequate in your current ask. If you don't think when you go through and look at it again, if you think it's not adequate, then put that in there what you think would be adequate in the costs.
I would also add that we'll be going through a formal process with them soon, because the 10 years will be up, and then you're required to file, you know, more formal decommissioning plans, in which case the other companies have gone through and estimated that very thing, how much the salvage value is and all that.
It is our intention to follow the ordinary protocols.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. My question then would be, about how long would you anticipate you would need before you'd be ready to file that late filed exhibit?
In a number of days, like within early next week would be at the very latest. It may be within the next day or two. Could we have 7 days?
As much time,
Commissioner,
as
I think that's reasonable. Is it? Commissioner Fedorchuk, is that reasonable?
Sure.
Okay. Are there any other late filed exhibits that would be anticipated? I think that was the only one that was discussed. Anything else? No? So the record would remain open for the receipt of that late filed exhibit. Is there anything else that we need to discuss? As I said, at the end of the proceedings, I always give an opportunity for testimony from the public. I haven't seen anybody from the public enter the hearing room, so I guess we'll dispense with that portion of the hearing since I don't see anybody that would be doing that. We always give an opportunity for closing arguments or summation. Is there a need to do that? Mr. Gerhardsen, would you like to make a closing statement?
Your Honor, thank you. I'll just thank everybody for working through what I think is one of the more complex rate-making issues that any of us will have to tackle, and appreciate the informality at times that was tolerated. Also, I'd just like to say that I hope that we've demonstrated our case that what we are doing is conventional business practice, conventional rate-making practice, that the overall benefit of these projects is very favorable. The customers have been getting very low rates because of them, will continue to get very low rates in part because of them and in part because of other actions of our company. We continue to be a low-cost provider in the region. It is our philosophy. Part of our mission statement, part of what every one of our employees thinks when they come to work, is how do we produce and deliver energy at the lowest reasonable cost. So we will continue to do that. I do have one item of administrative question that I might just put at the end of my little statement here, and that is I do know that Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco did ask if we could provide a proposed order. We are willing to do that. And I think we could do that in a reasonable amount of time. Say, although I suppose, would 2 weeks be reasonable? And I'll pose that sort of hypothetically to the group.
Ms. Fedorchuk?
Yeah, that works for me. Brian, 2 weeks?
Absolutely. I would just want to recommend that the three of us have a work session on this as quickly as possible, because I have no idea where my colleagues are at. So you might spend a lot of time on a proposed order that the three of us have a work session on, so whatever they decide is fine, but we'll try to get this as quick as we can on a work session and see where we're at.
Yeah, at this point, we're
our
looking
next
at.
The commission meeting is the 18th. Are you going to suggest a work session before that? May 18th, May 4th, May 5th?
No, we could schedule next Tuesday.
5th. Thursday.
Tuesday, I think, is our.
Thursday. The 5th.
Whenever that work session is, or whenever our meeting is.
Yeah, it's the 5th.
Okay.
And that would be right after The date that we're anticipating the late filed exhibit would be in.
A minute. You are correct.
Okay. Sorry. You're making me nervous.
So, Commissioner Fedorchuk, are you looking for a proposed order before May 5th?
No, I don't think so. We can have a work session without a proposed order if
Absolutely.
The portfolio holder chooses.
I can't
to
tell
so.
Where the three, oftentimes in meetings you can tell where your colleagues are at, but I have no idea where the three of us are at here.
Well, I'll signal in my closing comments.
And is there any need for closing briefs? No closing briefs? Mr. Hsu, I didn't ask you. Would you like to make a closing statement?
I don't really have much to say, Your Honor, just that we request that the renewable rider adjustment be approved with the specified modifications.
The only thing that I have to add sort of as a procedural matter is that there's been a little bit of discussion or perhaps consideration of whether there would be consolidation of this proceeding with another proceeding. And I do just want to bring to the Commission's attention that there are administrative rules that would apply if it's the Commission's desire to do that. And so I would just bring your attention to, for example, 6902.04.04, which would provide the procedure for consolidation. The Commission may do that upon its own motion if it would like to do that, but considerations must be made if you do that as to whether the rights of the parties or the public interest would be prejudiced by consolidation of the two proceedings. And also I would bring your attention to the fact that we are already in a hearing, you know, for one of these proceedings. And so if it was the desire of the Commission to somehow consolidate those two proceedings, you would almost need to have a motion to continue this particular proceeding for the purpose of accepting evidence in the other proceeding. If that's not done and we close the hearing today, or at least we're going to leave it open for the receipt of that late filed exhibit, if we leave this hearing open, while it is still open, you may make that decision. Again, you know, considering the rights of the public with regard to that decision. If you don't make that decision within the time that is allowed for that receipt of that late filed exhibit, in other words, if you don't make that decision before that late filed exhibit comes in and the hearing is then closed, in order to consolidate the proceedings, you would have to reopen this proceeding as a procedural matter, because at some point the hearings have to close. So I just want to make you aware of how that would work, depending on your decision. You don't have to make that decision today because the hearing remains open for the receipt of that late filed exhibit. So just so you have that information. You're welcome. And with that, is there anything left to complete from the parties aside from closing comments from the commissioners? Nothing? Thank you. Then I would take closing comments. Commissioner Calk.
Well, thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, everyone, for the thorough hearing today. We had two witnesses, and it took us a good chunk of the day. And I appreciate it. It's good discussion. I guess going forward, I think we can talk about it a little bit. We'll have next Thursday our commission meeting, and we'll, you know, I might even add, we add this to discussion, to this topic about continuing the hearing on discussion next week, and we could schedule a work session down there. We can sort that out. But I think for me, one of the things that I said in my opening comments was, you know, get a good record developed and have some discussions about, you know, how we got here and what the best path going forward is. And I think that's, for me, is, you know, I saw nothing today that, or heard nothing today that makes me question the cost that you're asking in this case. It all certainly seems appropriate. And from what I've reviewed in the other cases, I mean, everything there seems to be appropriate. It's just a matter of decisions that were made in the commission in 2009, which I was part of, kind of set the stage for the renewable rider and the environmental rider because of the unique set of circumstances that we were in at that time. What I hope to get out of this hearing today, I think we've accomplished, but the next stage is sitting with my colleagues now that are here and look at what they would like to do going forward with this particular set of facts and how we deal with Otter Tail as a company. And, you know, the energy world is very dynamic, and so these riders might be the right thing to do, but at least this is a good chance for the three of us to kind of set the groundwork of what the rules are for Otter Tail going forward and how this might relate to other cases, because I do think our challenges are going to get greater, not less, in the world of transmission planning and the Schedule 26 costs and how these environmental things come in. So we should have this discussion. You guys happen to be the ones, I think, that put it all together, a very good case. But for my colleagues, that's what I really hope to get out of the first chance we discuss is, how do you want to handle this? We can handle it this way like we have done for the last 6 years, or we can make some changes, because it's, I think now is the time to send signals to the company about how we want to do this. So thank you all for your good work, and I look forward to the discussion next week, hopefully with my colleagues.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
I'll echo Commissioner Kalk's appreciation to both parties for a good explanation, for your patience in some of our questions, which I know when you're not a CPA, an accountant, some of this, sometimes we're not even in like the same room when it comes to language. So I do really appreciate the time spent kind of bringing us up to speed on how all this stuff works. I support this. I think it's, you've clearly shown what the costs are and why you're doing this, and how it's going to affect the customers long term. I also appreciate just the overall low cost that your company is providing to customers, and that is something that, we may not always be able to explain, like Mr. Diller said, every move and every line item of a bill, but the overall cost to the customers is one that's pretty easy to defend. And so I am comfortable with that. In terms of the bigger issues on how to move forward, I don't really have a desire to combine this hearing with the other case. I think the costs are all separate. The only thing that's kind of carries over is some of the taxes and the using of the taxes to benefit one and hold off on the other. So I don't really want to delay the implementation of this rider and mix these two issues up. I am open to some thoughts on how to deal with the renewable rider, long term, possibly moving it to the fuel cost area and looking at recovering those there. I'd like to explore that with staff and my colleagues in the work session. So I think that's worthy of some time and consideration. And otherwise, I also wanted to say I appreciate the company's willingness to offer up the reductions in the ROE moving forward, and staff's attention to the earnings in reviewing these when we don't have rate cases. I think we have to do that and use every tool at our disposal to help keep that in balance. And then also the change in the allocation factors. So thank you for that. And I look forward to working through these issues and getting a decision as quickly as we can.
Commissioner Christman.
Well, I also would thank everybody, both Otter Tail staff as well as our own staff. And as far as the case itself, I think a pretty strong case has been made here. As far as, although that doesn't mean that I'm not interested in the late filed exhibit, because I do still think it's important. As far as combining these cases, Jerry pointed out that it could come with a significant cost. I don't know exactly what significant is in that statement. And so depending on that cost, I might be completely against it and want to move this along as quickly as possible. But in order to get to the point of having both things reach customers at the same time so that they don't see a dramatic swing one way and a dramatic swing another way, but instead a net, I don't think we'd even need to really combine the cases. If the cost of holding up on this isn't a lot, we could just delay a decision on this or delay an implementation date. So I think there's options to doing that, and we got to get a handle on what kind of a financial impact there would be to a decision later rather than sooner. And lastly, as far as changing policy, as far as riders go, I am very much not inclined to do it at this moment, make any changes, because I can just imagine over the course of various cases, there's times when it would seem logical to do more or less with riders as opposed to more or less rate cases. And in other instances, it might be different. And so I don't want to react to one specific case and change our policy and what we do. I think it should be kind of a separate activity on our part to evaluate whether what we're doing with riders is the best way to move forward or not. That's all. I have nothing else. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Thank you, everybody. It's about 2:48 p.m. Thanks for your attention and your patience today, and the record will remain open for those late filed exhibits and proposed orders. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.